ask questions. Don't just assume that the things you think about the industry are correct, because they might not be.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 81. Today, I am super excited to welcome founder and creator of Unconventional Productions, Malik Dadi. Malik is a full-time entertainer, presenter, and speaker with various awards to his credit. Through his company, Unconventional Productions, he focuses on helping clients reach elevated levels of engagement and connection by creating customized entertainment and speaking programs. Malik uses his background as a magician, mentalist, comedian, and variety artist to design memorable, impactful, and thematically relevant programs for companies and organizations in the public and private sector nationwide. Malik is a sought-after trade show and conference presenter and the creator of the country's only golf-themed corporate comedy magic show. He's an effective and inspiring speaker, drawing on personal experiences to motivate audiences. Malik studied communications at Dean College in Franklin, Mass. And Fitchburg State University. He recently achieved the Advanced Communicator Bronze Certification from Toastmasters International. He still dabbles in video production, but mostly for friends and family. Malik has lived on 3 continents and currently resides in the Boston area with his wife and daughter. When he isn't developing new material or sending late-night emails, he spends part of his time as a stay-at-home dad. Malik, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I am very excited about this.
Certainly. We are excited as well. But before we jump into your actual entrepreneurial journey, we want to kind of rewind the clock just a little bit. Go back to days of high school or junior high. Think about a time when an aunt or uncle would have asked you what it is you wanted to be when you grew up. What did you think life would be like in the future?
So I went through a few phases. And if you'd asked me in junior high, I probably would have told you I wanted to be an astronaut, and I had plans to go to space camp. Then I came to the rude awakening that you need to be a genius, and a genius who's not 6'1 and almost 300 pounds. then I had a strong interest in going into law enforcement. But where that ran into an issue was I didn't want to just be a police officer. I wanted to do something FBI level. And because that was so hard to get into, I looked at it and said, well, you know, if I don't get into the FBI Academy, let's say, I'm not really that keen on what the other options would be for me at that point. So I went a different path.
So you started off thinking you may end up in space one day, then decided to kind of pivot over to law enforcement. So now I'm very curious, how did the story evolve into your choosing magic?
It was always something that I did as a hobby. And through high school and college, that was what I did as my part-time job. I didn't work for a landscaper or at a grocery store or any of the things that some of my peers were doing. I would go do kids' birthday parties before I was old enough to drive. My mom used to drive me to shows, and it just was something I stuck with.
So let me ask you this. For entrepreneurs or people who are looking to get into an industry or to start in kids' parties or birthday parties or things of that sort, when they're launching their careers in magic or any sort of entertainment, how did you go about doing that as a student yourself? How did you go about booking those events in order to launch your career?
Well, firstly, if somebody came to me now and wanted to get into this industry, I may not necessarily advise them to take the path that I took. Generally, back then, I was getting a lot of my work through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much all of it. You know, I started pre-internet, so there wasn't a such thing as having a website.
Right.
I remember my first business card was, I think, my name and magician and a phone number. that was, you know, my parents' house, like my family phone number. So I had to kick my sister off the phone to take calls about shows. What I would say is, if somebody was going to get into this business now, I would probably tell them, firstly, don't make the mistake of overestimating your ability and your qualifications, because that's something that we tend to do as a matter of habit in this industry, and it's a bad habit. Mm-hmm. I actually call it renegade Jedi syndrome, that somebody gets a little bit of power and then they think they can rule the world. And one thing I said to a younger performer once is, one of the ways you know you're a professional is when you develop the quality of humility, when you start to realize that maybe not every show in the world is something you can do, and you're not the right guy for every gig or every client, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would tell them is, understand that this is show and business, because mm-hmm. the other mistake a lot of us make is that we are good performers and terrible business people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us end up playing catch up on that end mm-hmm. and learning the business after the fact.
A habit that I believe many entrepreneurs fall into, because yeah. there are a lot of us who start off with this passion project.
Yeah.
And it's not really something that you're focused on being a business or having organized mm-hmm. in that manner. So it's not a focus for a lot of entrepreneurs as they start that journey, simply because it wasn't the original intent. It often blossoms into that. But I just want to bring it back for a moment, because I thought that was hilarious that you were mentioning kicking your sister off the phone in order to take calls. I totally sympathize. We're just dating ourselves yeah. here, but I sympathize with the idea of having to kick your siblings off the phone. And hopefully our audience can also understand, very much so the same. Back in the day, you didn't have the easy access to your own phone line.
Right.
Never mind a phone that you could take with you places.
Right.
You literally had to share that phone line in your parents' home. So,
and I was 15. Yeah. I wasn't running this, you know, entertainment empire, you know, right. It's like maybe once every 2 weeks, somebody would call and say, hey, come do my kids' party,
right.
You know?
Right. You really started it word of mouth, very organic yeah. in the way that, you know, most businesses would hope to grow, but end up finding themselves spending in marketing dollars on a regular basis. So what were some of the first steps? You went to Fitchburg State, you were in college. What were some of the first steps you decided were important to you and to your journey when you decided, you know what, I would rather brand myself and actually do magic on a regular basis versus going down any other path? What led you from law enforcement over to magic?
So the sort of tight version of the story is, I ended up going to school for communications because I had already decided at that point that I wasn't going to follow the criminal justice path. Okay. And I ended up interning because the school I went to required an internship for communications majors in order to graduate. Mm-hmm. We had to do a full semester, full-time, unpaid internship. Mm-hmm. And I ended up at a company called Media 100 that made nonlinear editing systems, so video editing systems that run on a computer. Just so we can date ourselves a little more, this was in 2000, and on my desk, I had an entire cubicle full of hardware to get less capability than I now have in my cell phone editing video. This was back when 30 gigs was a monstrous amount of space for hard drives, and it was a separate box attached with a SCSI port. You know, I had two 19-inch CRT tube monitors, and I had to sit 8 feet away from my desk just to see everything. So I interned there in their international support, and then I got hired to work domestic support. Through that entire period, I had been doing magic part-time, nights, weekends, restaurants, parties, that sort of thing. And the company rapidly declined, not because of me. I always say that. their stock price went from $27 a share to 50 cents a share in 3 months.
Wow.
And I'm not a finance guy, but even I know that's not good.
Yeah.
And I decided maybe it wasn't a good thing for me to stick with, because pretty much everybody in the company was going to be out of a job in a year anyway. Okay. And so the process in my head was, well, I've already been doing this as some kind of a job. Why don't I just try to do it as some kind of a job all the time? Mm-hmm. And that was my very inefficient and unglamorous foray into being a full-time performer.
But that's not an inefficient way. That's the launch of a lot of entrepreneurial journeys.
Yeah, that's true.
I've heard so many stories at this point, Malik, that it's almost common for each of us to have this hobby or something that we appreciate, something that we enjoy doing in general, that just tends to kind of take over at the right moment, at the right time, when we recognize that the age-old 40 years with a company, retire with a pension and a package, just doesn't exist anymore. Our generation came upon the universe at a time in history when we don't have the same opportunities and advantages that our parents did, and we really do have to focus on creating that opportunity for ourselves. And I think that's why entrepreneurship as a whole is on a rise, because we all grasp the concept that that pension and that retirement plan that we witnessed generations prior have and enjoy will not be there when we get there. And if we don't figure it out for ourselves now in some sort of form of passive income, and even if it's not just a passive income, income that you're completely in control of, then you're not going to have that retirement in the end in the same way. When I became an entrepreneur, it wasn't through a hobby or a passion. It was actually due to a chronic illness diagnosis that threw me into an unpaid medical leave, of which I decided, well, why don't I go with finance and begin consulting people on what I do know, and from there began growing my practice. But it was really, when it comes to the journey, it's never something that's planned out per se. There's rare entrepreneurs who I've had as guests, spotted few that I can count on one hand, that decided from a young age that this was what they wanted, and actually followed their path, stuck with their goals, and went through and became what they planned on becoming in life. So really, the entrepreneurial journey is something that kind of strikes us all at some point in life, be it at a high note or a low note. It's usually some sort of pivot moment for all of us throughout the journey. When you made the decision and said, okay, so magic has been serving me for quite some time. I've had this opportunity to, you know, grow a small business on the side, even if it's only part-time. And the other practice, Media 100, was obviously clearly going out of business, was no longer a secure point for you. What do you feel were some of the first steps that you took when you decided, all right, it's time to begin branding myself? What did you do from there?
Well, I was working some regular accounts. I had a regular performing gig at a family restaurant. Mm-hmm. I actually had a few of those. So I really was going with this idea of, it was really this business model of, I'm going to show up on time. I'm going to do a good job, you know, say please and thank you, be the kind of person that people would like to hire, and hope that they hire me. Which isn't a great business model. It should be, but it's not.
Right.
So this goes back to what I was saying before about how so many people in my industry are bad at the business end of things. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first decided to leave, you know, my regular cubicle job, I didn't have a website. I had a cell phone. I was living in a one-bedroom apartment, you know. I wasn't really anybody's version of a business person. I was just really feeling around in the dark and doing this and taking whatever gig I could get. I was doing some work through intermediary sources like party planners and agents and that sort of thing, which is a whole other can of worms. I didn't even have a written business plan or anything. I just really went in as much by the seat of my pants as one can do. It's been a slow build, but now it turned into something more functional.
What do you feel are some of the bigger steps that you took when you recognized, okay, I've got to turn this more into a business? What did you feel were some of the steps that you took there? What do you think were some of the biggest helpers for you? Do you feel like it was a moment of you're actually recognizing that and deciding to take business courses? Or do you feel like you set up a website? What do you think you did next that helped you really transform it from this passion and hobby into your practice?
On a grander scheme, generally what has helped me build this into a business has been education, but really education specific to how business relates to my industry. Mm-hmm. So I've read a lot of books and taken courses, not only generally on how to be a business person, but how to be a business person in the entertainment field.
Right.
There are people who have achieved a lot of success in this industry who, fortunately for most of us, are now at a point that they're willing to share that knowledge. And so for me, the biggest single tool in a larger sense has been education. Over the years, you know, definitely getting a website, doing everything I can to make sure that when I'm at an event, I am doing the kind of job that makes people want to chase me down and hire me for their next event. The get seen working is still a viable way to book work. It just isn't the only thing that's going to work. So,
Of course. So tell us a little bit about Unconventional Productions as a whole. I know you do corporate and private functions. Do you have a special area that you appreciate the most when it comes to Unconventional Productions? Just tell us a little bit about your practice.
So the focus these days is, in addition to doing the things you would expect, like a corporate party or whatever, my main focus is that I realized that a lot of the people I was working with had their own audience and their own group that they were trying to reach. So what I focus on now is I use my skills as a magician, a mentalist, a comedian, and now I've added speaker to that toolbox recently. I use those tools to create and perform customized entertainment pieces, speaking programs, whatever's appropriate for the client. And the goal of that is to help them get their message across in a way that is engaging, memorable, informative. Everybody's got this cool story about the time they saw a magician do a trick. The way I explain it to my clients is, wouldn't it be better if they told that story, but they remembered where they were, what day it was, but most importantly, they remembered they were at an event or a trade show booth for your company, and they were talking about this thing.
Right.
And a magician did a cool trick. I don't even care if they remember what trick it was or that it was me. I just, the goal with what I'm trying to do these days is use all the tools I have to create, to leverage entertainment and all those things into an experience that makes my client's message more memorable. So
that's awesome. I love that you have really evolved throughout your journey from, you know, side magician throughout school as a teenager into a magician who is assisting clients in conveying messages through engaging experiences. That's an impressive transition throughout the journey. And I think it's something that, you know, for those who are looking at entertainment careers should really focus and think about it. Just because you decide, okay, I want to do magic on the side, it doesn't mean you're sticking to strictly magic shows. Listen to how Malik continued to add to his toolbox, add to the skill sets that he had so that he could expand on what it is he's doing. He now has some really customized, amazing programs that he's performing. From what I understand, you have one of the only customized golf programs here in the country, correct?
Yeah, this is sort of the grand irony is I don't play any kind of golf that doesn't involve like a windmill and a putter. But one of the industries that was not being served was I noticed that there's this huge industry around golf. And so I have developed what is, to my knowledge, the only show of its kind that's a magic show themed entirely around golf. And in addition to that, it's also capable of being fully themed and customized like all my other programs. So like if you're, say, a company that makes golf stuff, not only can we come do the golf show, but it can have your logo, your brand, your message infused into that show in a way that it looks like it belongs there. It's almost like being a brand ambassador with the benefit of 25 years of entertainment experience behind it. And that's sort of just a question of nobody else is doing this really to this scale. I'm certainly not the first magician to do stuff with golf paraphernalia, but I wanted to take it to a bigger scale and a larger level so it can be a full evening golf-themed magic show if you want it to be. And that's my newest project, and it makes me laugh every time I work on it because I actually had to ask a friend who plays golf to teach me how to hold a club for one of the tricks I was doing.
I love it.
Because I honestly, like, I'm the guy that goes to play mini golf, and we have contests about how ridiculous a shot we can make.
That is my family style of golfing as well. I will admit, we are definitely mini putters who enjoy seeing how ridiculous we can get with the mini putts. 100%.
I played a round of mini golf, and I had an 8-stroker and 3 holes-in-1 in the same game. So there you go. But it really came down to just realizing that nobody else, it was kind of a blue ocean moment that nobody else was playing in that area.
Right.
At least not to any significant level. So I wanted to leverage that. And that's my newest offering.
That's awesome. And I think, you know, I wanted to highlight that because not only is it, as you mentioned, it's a really unique show. It's the only one like it here in the country.
That I know of.
That you know of. But it's really a way of, once again, allowing that pivot to take place in your journey. You don't play golf. You never thought you were going to be customizing golf magic shows. I mean, that's not at all what you thought when you were 6 to 10 years old. But that is how the journeys evolve. It's really focusing on where the opportunities are and then making sure that you're serving the customers and the client base where you see that opportunity in existence. So I love that. Malik, what would you caution as one of the biggest mistakes that you see first-time entrepreneurs or newbies making, and how would you caution them against avoiding it?
This will be somewhat industry-specific, but I think it does have some application outside of my industry. There's a school of thought that if you're going to go into being a full-time entertainer, the thing you should do first and foremost is, before you quit your job, have a certain amount of living expenses saved in the bank. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine's actually going through this process right now. He just left a job that he wasn't really enjoying all that much. He's always wanted to be a full-time entertainer and is in a pretty good position because he's been able to save almost a year's worth of living expenses. And so now he's able to launch his business in a way where he doesn't have to make choices out of necessity. So he doesn't have to take gigs because he needs to put food on the table. He can really craft and decide who he wants to work for and on what terms. Right. And doesn't have to worry about paying the rent and getting his bills paid and all that stuff. That's one thing. And then the second mistake that I see a lot of entrepreneurs make is they assume that they're a finished product. They don't understand that they probably need to know a lot more about their business and business in general than they think they do. Like, for instance, a lawyer has to pass a bar exam. You know, a doctor has to pass various exams and go through various processes to ensure that they know their job. A lot of entrepreneurial fields don't have
that. No, there's no real checks and balances per se to an entrepreneurial journey in the same manner that there are in most careers.
And that I think
is one of the harder pieces as an entrepreneur to take on is really creating those checks and balances for yourself and making sure that not only, like you said, not only are you not a finished product and be prepared for those pivots, but preparing for those pivots, as you mentioned first, really making sure that you have some sort of backup ready for you so that when the pivots have to occur, you can allow for them to occur without freaking out, without overstepping boundaries that you've set for yourself previously. Making sure the savings is there is not just something that is in the entertainment industry. That spans across any entrepreneurial journey. Making sure that you have some sort of backup for you during the months that you are starting off in order to support the end goal is really one of the wisest things anyone can do before they take that leap. You can't take the leap and have to find something to pay the bills because you end up stressed, overworked, frustrated, and it turns into a situation where it's much more difficult to find the work to pay the bills when you're in that negative moment. You know, it boils down to mindset. And if your mindset is in fight or flight mode, the ability to really serve isn't fully there. Right. If you had a time machine.
Oh, boy. we could do a whole interview just on that.
And could go back, say, 10 to 15 years and tell yourself just one thing. What would that be?
If I could tell myself one thing 10 or 15 years ago, it would be that the most important thing is the hustle. That in this business that I'm in, a lot of us make the mistake of just waiting for the work to come to us. And it's a hustle every day. You have to be out there doing that kind of work. One of my coaches and mentors, you know, he says, show and business, work on the business harder than you work on the show. And it'll sort itself out. So that would probably be the biggest piece of advice I'd give myself is be disciplined and do the hustle and power through the tough times, because when you're hustling for business, any entrepreneur knows it's not easy. You know, we all have common challenges with rejection and, you know, obstacles and that kind of thing. But being able to just be disciplined and power through that is the one thing I'd probably tell myself, because I've had moments of not having the discipline that I needed. And it's been a setback that you really can't recover from fully.
Yes. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. That I think is, you know, again, just really making sure that you are the master of your own journey.
That's the perfect way to say it.
And really recognizing that wholly, that there is no one else that's going to make it move forward but you. And making sure that you're out there networking, hustling, making sure that you're drumming up that business at all times is what it's about. I know my daughter hates that I'm constantly on it, because whenever we go anywhere, of course, I have to speak to people. I have to touch base. And eventually something related to the business is going to come up. And it's just something that she's like, oh, you always have to talk about your business.
Yeah,
I do, because otherwise I won't have one, is what I tell my daughter. Yes, I do, because otherwise I won't have one. The show is really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for innovative companies to solve a pain in an industry that they may not have been thinking of. And Malik, you are our very first magician. I would love to know,
I'm
in your day-to-day operations, when you're doing shows, what do you feel is your biggest hiccup? What is your biggest headache? And how do you think if it was solved, it would affect not only your practice, but maybe the entertainment industry or magic entertainment industry as a whole?
So I can sort of answer this in two parts. The biggest hiccup that I deal with consistently is really a case of perception. I operate in an industry that is widely misunderstood. And a lot of the obstacles I run into are from people that, the way I like to say it is, I get a lot of people who call me for like a quote on an event, and they have already decided what their budget is before they've actually talked to any potential service providers. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that guess that they took is wrong through no fault of their own. You know, if you've never shopped for a car before, you don't know what a car costs. But that perception, for some reason, when people are presented with the information that what they thought is not correct, they are very resistant to being educated about that. They would rather dig their heels in and keep looking until they find something that satisfies their previous perception than to understand that because of something that was out of their control, they made a decision that was not backed by reality. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of an obstacle that we run into a lot. You know, people think that what we do shouldn't cost as much as it does or doesn't cost as much as it does. And then there are some other general ideas about how we do this kind of work, who it's for. You know, I'm at the forefront of a crusade to educate people that magic is not just a kid thing. You know, actually these days about 60% of my work is for, you know, people tall enough to ride the big roller coaster, as I like to say. So the second part, as far as, you know, innovative companies, this will be really kind of putting a fine point on it, but there has been a proliferation of what we commonly refer to as gig sites. So these are sites like Angie's List, Home Advisor, Gig Masters, Gig Salad. There's another one called Thumbtack. All of these sites have basically one problem, is they turn into this auction site where people are not bidding on jobs based on quality, they're bidding based on price. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the type of industry that I'm in, the fastest way to get yourself disappointed is to cut your price and go with the cheapest person you can find. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these sites, they really exacerbate that issue because they're not doing anything to help manage people's expectations appropriately about what they should be expecting to pay for services. If somebody could somehow come up with a way to build one of these sites that had all of that information correct, and they built it with input from service providers on what the pain points are in the individual industries, they could probably
Yelp for the entertainment industry. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like a Yelp where you can get ratings and reviews based off of the service provider's performance previously.
That's part of it, but you can actually, so let's say you're looking for, we'll use a magician since that's the industry I'm in. Let's say you're looking for a magician for any type of event in the Boston area, which is where I'm based. If you Google, you know, magician in Boston, other than Google AdWord hits, the first few natural search results you're going to get are from these gig sites because they have thrown a ton of money at their SEO. Some of them have investment money from places like Google. And so you can go on those sites and say, okay, I want a magician in this town. It's for this type of event. It's for this many people. It's for this long. And then they will send that request out to various providers who have registered in their system. who then have the option of bidding on that event. What they don't do, what that site doesn't do, is say, okay, you should expect to pay for the parameters you have put in. If you want an actual professional who's competent and qualified, you should expect to pay this amount of money.
I get exactly
this amount of money.
An estimate.
They've tried to do it, and they've gotten it all wrong. You know, most of them, I've seen some of the numbers they're putting out for, like, this is the fee range for this, and they're numbers that I don't even want to start my car. So what would be a really interesting niche business, and I've suggested this to some of the existing ones, is to come up with one of these sites that serves almost like as an online booking agency, but that has input from experienced providers so that it runs correctly and so that the goal is to get somebody the best provider, not the cheapest provider. And they exist. There's a Facebook group I'm in for one of these particular gig sites, and it's all people who use it. And there's a guy who does furniture installation, and there's DJs and photographers and painters and roofers and all kinds of different providers in all kinds of industries. And we're all noticing common flaws. And that seems to be the one that comes up the most, is that people just aren't, they don't have a realistic expectation, and the site doesn't do anything to fix that. Right. It makes it worse. So that would be really
to go with the cheapest provider versus the most experienced or professional. And that that is one of the downfalls of the web. And you know, when people are shopping by price point versus by experience or service. So I totally agree with you on that. That is an excellent idea. So
web designers out there, if you feel like tackling that one, give me a call.
Yes. Excellent. Malik, please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
So the easiest way to find me for corporate work, things like trade shows, any of the customization work that we've talked about, and any of my speaking work, is my Unconventional Productions site, which is UP Conventional. And then if they want to look at my golf show, they can go to golfmagicshow.com. That site is a little content light right now, but it is the newer offering. So we're building that out. But both of those sites have email, cell phone number, all those things. And thing I would tell people is, if there's a project you're thinking of and you want to get a provider like me, call and ask questions. Don't just assume that the things you think about the industry are correct, because they might not be. And a lot of times somebody like me can help you in ways that you haven't even thought of.
Definitely. I think assuming anything in life makes
it. Well, there is that. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that saying, actually.
There you go. Malik, you've been wonderful.
Thank you.
I thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your story with the community.
This has been such a treat. Thank you so much.
Malik, thank you once again for joining us and for sharing your time and expertise with the community. And techie community, remember to prepare for the pivots mentally, emotionally, and financially. And remember to make a little time for magic. Reach out to Malik Adadi at upconventional.com. You can always reach him through our show notes page at technology-equality.com/Malik Adadi. Thank you once again for joining me. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions. Enjoy the week.